This is New York Now.
Hi, you're listening to the New York Now Convention Cast. I'm Casey Seiler from the Albany Times Union. I'm here with my colleague Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio. We have two great guests today, Controller Tom DiNapoli and Stephanie Miner, Mayor of Syracuse, New York.
Let's take a listen.
Testing 1, 2, 3, or good morning, hello Philadelphia.
Our first guest, happy to say, is State Controller Tom DiNapoli. Thanks for talking to us.
It's an honor to be your first guest.
Yeah,
an
thanks.
Exciting week.
Thanks.
Okay, today clearly is Bernie Day. This is the day that the party, one of among the many things it has to do, is try and settle a rift that has broken out and over the course of the last, I would say, 72 hours has deepened between the Bernie faction of the party and those supporting, like yourself, supporting Hillary Clinton, the presumptive candidate. What do you think has to happen today? You know many of these people. They're from the progressive wing of the party, and they're cheesed off, many of them.
Yeah, I don't know that I characterize it as it's deepened. I mean, it's certainly been there. I think you're right. And certain events, you know, one of the emails and so on, has reopened some wounds that were starting to heal. But I also think when I've spoken to the Bernie folks who are in the New York delegation, you know, this also comes after the Republican convention in Cleveland and a real sense that the Trump candidacy is one that should be a unifying force in terms of the party. And I think a recognition that Bernie Sanders has a following. And while I don't think there's much concern that his supporters will vote for Trump, the concern is that his supporters will stay home and not vote. And certainly if you look at the bump that the Republicans received from the convention, who knows how long that'll last, it suggests a close race, you know, which frankly doesn't surprise me. So I think that whatever differences there might be or wounds that haven't fully healed, there is a recognition that the party must come together. And I think much of that will really depend on what Bernie Sanders himself says. And I think, again, based on the poor reception of Cruz's speech, that's going to be a lesson for how not to do it. And I think you're going to see a much more enthusiastic embrace of the Democratic Party and of the Democratic candidate for president, certainly, than you saw on the Republican side.
So you don't expect Bernie Sanders to go up there tonight and say, vote your conscience, everyone?
Well, he was having everybody vote their conscience earlier, and that didn't quite work out in terms of his numbers. But I think you look at the Republican platform, and certainly it is in stark contrast to the progressive values that are, you know, part of the Democratic platform. The Democratic platform very much has accommodated the Bernie Sanders agenda, and I think that was probably a smart move. So I think you're going to see a warm embrace of the Democratic Party principles, and I do think you'll see a positive message being sent about Hillary Clinton's candidacy.
So you think they'll see the larger picture, despite the fact that, you know, as of this morning, they're pretty mad about the whole WikiLeaks thing and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and looking like things were steered away from Bernie and towards Hillary.
But I think that's probably something they felt all along anyway. So maybe there's a validation, you know, and as Casey said, maybe that's, for now at least, as some deepening of wounds that already existed. But I do think that Debbie Wasserman Schultz stepping aside certainly is helpful in terms of their feelings. And I do think that the Sanders supporters that I've known are motivated by the bigger picture. I mean, Bernie was an important messenger and someone who they enthusiastically supported, but it was really his issues that mattered. So, you know, when you look at the issues reflected in our platform versus the Republicans, the bigger picture is you must support Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine, and you must be working hard to make sure that the Republicans don't win. So I think the Sanders supporters will come. Keep in mind one thing. Even when I looked at the list of the Sanders delegates in New York, I didn't know most of those names. These are by and large first-time convention people, maybe first-time
grassroots
involved.
Very activists, grassroots. Many of them. A handful of lawmakers, but not many, especially compared to Hillary.
So I think that sense of party loyalty or party discipline that those of us who have been around the party politics for a long time might feel, they don't feel that.
No.
But you know, a convention is a chance to come together. So instead of being in our own camps, we're all in the same hotel, we'll be going to the same delegation meetings, we'll be sharing time on the floor. You know, will there be some pushing of elbows a little bit? Maybe. But I think in the long run, it's going to be an opportunity to come together.
Casey and I were both in Cleveland last week. The Trump forces there, particularly Carl Palladino, who's running Trump's campaign, and others say they want to make New York a battleground state. They think New York is in play. especially in upstate and Long Island, where you're from. So what do you think of that? Is that realistic? Is it going to be a battleground state?
Well, you know, I have always felt that sometimes we fall into that bad habit of talking to ourselves all the time. And I've felt that too many of my Democratic friends that have been so confident that Hillary's going to win 40 states and it's going to be that's not how I've read it for a long period of time. Now, how competitive New York will be, you know, I still think it's pretty fair to say that New York will vote Democratic. But, you know, let's keep in mind, Trump is from New York, so he's got some of his own connections. And you saw on the Republican side in the primaries, New York was really his breakout state. He got like 60% of the vote. It was the first time he got that high a percentage. So I think that there's probably a little more Trump support out there than some of my Democratic friends would like to admit. I've been on Long Island, and I was telling folks this morning, I was in the neighborhood I grew up in, and fair number of Trump signs in that neighborhood. So that's a generally Republican / independent neighborhood, as opposed to where I live now, which is more Democratic. I haven't seen too many Trump signs there. So I do think that there is a Trump following, and I do think that he will probably do better in New York than recent Republican candidates, but I would find it really hard to believe that New York would really be in play. If New York is in play, then every state is in play.
What are you as a statewide elected official? I mean, what's your schedule for the convention? What do you hope to get out of it besides, of course, kind of showing your face and showing party loyalty? Are you speaking to delegations? Are you communing with controllers, Democratic controllers from other states? I mean, what are you up to? Do you guys have a club?
It's the inner convention of controllers.
We never reveal where we commune and how we do it. That's part of the secret society of controllers.
Yes, exactly. Now we can see the tattoo through your shirt. Yes.
What I'm looking forward to is more of the informal networking, certainly with fellow New Yorkers. I have had some outreach. Actually, the Philadelphia controller wants to get together with me. You know, the problem is the schedule is kind of fluid, and they're being a little strict about having a show up at an early time to the convention, the Florida convention. The whips are very, very, very
whippy.
Stringent, whippy, yeah. And nasty, and very demanding and controlling. So, I have had no formal request to address other delegates. I mean, there's so many superstars here, they don't need a controller to address them.
And more importantly, do you eat cheesesteak?
I have not yet. I had shepherd's pie last night at an Irish pub, so I haven't had cheesesteak.
I had a chicken cheesesteak. I don't know if I don't know if that's sacrilege here or not, but it was very, very good.
Your political activism started early. You were an energetic tyro out on Long Island. What was your first national convention?
Where I actually went?
Yeah.
To a convention. My first one, actually, I ran as a Dukakis delegate in 1988. That was my first one in Atlanta. And it was a great convention, notable for not only Dukakis' nomination, but Jesse Jackson's speech mm-hmm. was quite incredible. And I was actually reminding people last night that the emotions that, I was sitting next to some Jackson delegates, their response to his speech was so emotional and moving. You really got a sense of how important that candidacy was to his supporters. And that's part of what you get when you're at a convention. You see up close, you know, the emotions of it. Mm-hmm. The other notable thing about that convention, of course, was the extra long and not well-received speech by Bill Clinton.
That's right.
That's
4 years
right.
Later, he was like,
yeah.
Everybody's like, who is this guy? Why is he talking for so long? You know, something they say about me these days. So I remember that. My first campaign in terms of doing some work was a case, as you mentioned, when I first started, you know, running for school board and 18 and rolling as a Democrat in a Republican neighborhood, Republican household, was McGovern. Mm-hmm. And I remember the McGovern campaign, by the time, I forgot what month New York was, it was either May or June, was really on a roll. And many of us felt that, wow, McGovern's, you know, on the verge of becoming president. Of course, that unraveled pretty quickly after the convention. But, that was kind of the tail end of the anti-Vietnam War era and that level of activism. But I always found that, and it's changed a little bit, perhaps, but what I always appreciated in terms of being a Democratic Party activist is that every 4 years is really when we used to get the infusion of new blood and younger people into the process. And I do think that's a big plus of the Sanders campaign this year, is that in ways that we haven't seen, well, we did see it in, when Obama ran the first time. And then, of course, the re-election, you didn't quite have as much in terms of young people, but Sanders is kind of bringing that back. And my hope is that the Sanders activists will stay committed to the process and to the party and be that infusion of new blood. And look, you're already seeing the rules changes that are being agreed to. It's going to mean the next go-around, you know, this issue of superdelegates is going to be of less, mm-hmm. you know, importance. Whether that's good or bad, you know, people are still debating. But the opportunity for the grassroots, in fact, to push the party, just as in 72 when I first got involved, the rules changes helped McGovern become the nominee, which, again, people can debate whether that was a good or bad thing in the long run.
After the debacle of 1968.
Which was a real debacle. You know, and isn't there a lot about 2016 that feels like 68?
We were talking in Cleveland with Ed Cox, who for 68 was his first convention when he was dating Trisha Nixon, and he said just how incredible it was to be backstage with the Nixon family. So.
Yeah, I mean, everything's so unsettled.
It's unsettled. And there's a level of division and violence, you know, frankly, that is reflected in the larger society. So far, not so much at the conventions. Let's hope not this week, but. But I think that unpredictability of our society right now is very much going to play into the campaign. It has already. Donald Trump's ascendancy was certainly not predicted in any way. Perhaps Hillary's was a little more predictable, but Bernie Sanders' strength was not predictable. So I really do think this is going to be an election that up until the very end, you're not going to know who really is going to be the winner. And events, external events globally or nationally, could flip it one way or the other, even last minute.
The New York delegation. We're going to have Governor Cuomo here later this week. We're going to have New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. They're in kind of a famous feud right now. Do you see them as getting along? Speaking as someone who has had your differences with the governor in the past, do you see them as promoting unity, or do you think we're going to see any sparks or tensions?
Oh, I don't think we'll see sparks or tensions at the convention. I think, you know, look, they're both on board with Hillary. They both have their long relationships. I think that a convention, especially with prominent elected officials, everybody's going to try to outdo each other on their support and enthusiasm for Clinton Kaine. So I don't think you'll see any sparks flying. Of course, it'll depend on what press questions are asked about things back home that may cause some interesting commentary. But I think in terms of what they'll be doing and how they'll be positioning themselves, it'll be about one big happy family.
All right. State Controller Tom DiNapoli, thanks very much for taking the time. We really appreciate it. Enjoy your time in Philadelphia.
Likewise, you too.
Well, Karen, always good to talk to Tom DiNapoli, one of the most upbeat figures in state politics in the state or potentially in the nation. And we were lucky enough as well to talk to Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner. Thanks very much for coming in and talking with us.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure. It's air conditioned in here, which is a huge incentive to be here.
Slightly air conditioned. They're on a top floor here. We shouldn't reveal too much about Casey's digs because they are just pretty amazingly beautiful.
Here in the Times Union Politico New York Bureau. And we were just talking before the microphone was turned on. Monday evening at the convention, you are going to be on stage with a fairly large delegation of New Yorkers. Tell us a little bit about that.
And there's not much to tell. I received an invitation saying that the secretary, that would be Secretary Clinton in this case, had asked that a part of the delegation from New York State be recognized on stage. And there's going to be 50 leaders, or approximately 50 leaders from across the state who are going to be on stage.
Some of the delegation, of course, is Bernie Sanders' delegates. They're a little bit peeved this morning, to say the least, over the WikiLeaks controversy, Deborah Wasserman Schultz leaving, which they're happy about. Do you see this as a distraction or some deeper sort of trouble within the party?
No, I think it's a distraction. I mean, but it's an understandable distraction. I have not read in any detail all of the documents that were released, but clearly it's very troubling when you see an email that talks about maybe we can use religion as a wedge issue. That's just not who we are and should not be tolerated, and it's completely understandable that people would be angry about it, and I think it's appropriate that they're angry about it. So decisions need to be made so that we can make sure that there are consequences to those bad judgments and then move forward.
Karen and I were in Cleveland last week, and one theme that we spoke to a lot of members of the state Republican delegation about was the fact that upstate New York, western New York especially, was fertile ground for Donald Trump because of the frustrations of many working-class people who felt left out of globalism, left out of global trade deals. Those are things that we're also hearing have heard, you know, here at the Democratic National Convention and over the course of this campaign, this primary campaign, from Bernie Sanders supporters as well. Can you speak to sort of the upstate quality of the sort of support that Sanders got? He, of course, you know, won a boatload of upstate counties.
He did, but he did not win Syracuse. He didn't win Onondaga County.
Right.
So a note of personal and professional pride at the fact that we worked very hard to make sure that Hillary's message got out. And she started her New York campaign in Syracuse right before the both the men's and women's basketball teams went to the Final Four. You know, what you're seeing is no surprise. People are very frustrated by the lack of economic development. And they've become very sophisticated, too, in hearing over and over again these promises of magic bullet solutions. And so I think that's why Donald Trump is not going to do well in upstate, because he says these often incendiary talking points, but there's no substance to it. And the upstaters that I know, that I work with, feel very deeply that there needs to be change, but they want substance.
The Trump forces do say that New York is going to be a battleground state for them.
That's ridiculous. They're just, I don't know whether they're saying that to make themselves feel better, but ain't no way. If New York is a battleground, I will buy each of you the drink of your choice. It's not going to happen.
All right. Journalists are not supposed to take bets from elected officials. We will, however, make an exception in this regard. What do you want to hear Bernie Sanders say when he speaks Monday night to the full convention? He's going to address his delegates at midday here on Monday. What does he need to say to the convention to sort of bring the plane in a graceful way? And do you think he's even interested in doing something like that?
I do, and I've talked to a lot of his supporters who have been here in the past, you know, less than 24 hours, have all been very gracious and warm. Everybody got involved in this race because they wanted to see our country do better. They wanted to see their families have better opportunities, their neighbors have better opportunities. And what I would like to hear Bernie say is recognize how important it is and how exciting it is that he brought so many new people to the process. But they have to stay engaged. And you stay engaged by understanding that an inherent part of politics is compromise, and that you're not always going to win every single time. But in order to make sure that you go in that positive direction, you learn to compromise and move, you know, one step forward at a time.
Now, you're a woman mayor, obviously. Were you the first female mayor of Syracuse?
I was. I am, and, I guess I should say.
And we have a female presidential candidate. I'm wondering what you thought about last week, if you watched the GOP convention, the chants of lock her up, Chris Christie's indictment where they're yelling guilty. I mean, well, what do you think of that?
It was disturbing to me as an American. You know, look, I got involved in politics and been involved in politics for a long time to make things better for people, not to have show trials or to kind of spew this just anger and nastiness that divides us. I mean, I found it really, really troubling that the chance of lock her up. I mean, and the way Donald Trump entered the arena to introduce his wife, it just struck me, my visceral reaction, that it was like some sort of North Korean, theater show trial type thing. It did not appeal to me, no surprise, but I don't think it appealed to a lot of Americans based on what I was hearing from the people that I was talking to in my day-to-day life.
Are you surprised in this day and age, 2016, that you would kind of have that kind of, you know, incident at the, trying to find the right word for this and be, you know, not be biased at a national convention of a major political party?
I am, but then I think back into our history, and we shouldn't be surprised because, you know, others have said it much more eloquently than I have written, much more eloquently than I can talk about, have said, you know, every hundreds of years or so, we kind of lose our minds. And it feels like we're doing that now. And, you know, look, it is, fear and anger are very strong motivators, and I think that's what you're seeing the Republicans appeal to. But we as Americans have always risen above that, and we have always, you know, whether we are open to that, we've always kind of had cooler heads prevail and say we're all in this together.
So how does Hillary Clinton sort of find the sweet spot between rebuffing that the very almost apocalyptic imagery that Donald Trump used in his Thursday night address to the crowd, while also kind of acknowledging that things in this country need to improve, that there are people who were left behind by the last however many years you want to say. In other words, maintaining a kind of democratic continuity while also saying we need to turn the page, as it were.
I think she does that through offering a positive message of saying that, of course, we have challenges in our country. We have always had challenges in our country. From, you know, we're in Philadelphia, where so many hundreds of years ago in a very hot summer, Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence. And, you know, all men are created equal. At that time, when he wrote that, people like Karen and I were not included in his thoughts, but we are now. And so I use that as it's part of our American history that, to quote another great American phrase, that we move together to form a more perfect union. Nothing is perfect. We always have to strive to make sure that there is an equality of opportunity for everyone. And I think you'll have Hillary Clinton and others say that we do that by working together with a message of including everybody and saying that, you know, the United States looks different from what it was in 1968, sort of, you know, the Richard Nixon kind of silent majority and dark America and law and order candidate. Mm-hmm. And the way that we're going to solve these issues of violence, these issues of inequality of opportunity, is by talking to each other, by listening to each other, and by working together.
What do you think about the choice of Tim Kaine for Hillary's VP?
So would it sound ironic if I said I'm excited by it? No, I actually
well,
am.
Well, tell us some, you know, positive things, because some have, on the left, have worried that he's too conservative.
Well, you know, look, there's, first, let me say that as he is somebody who was educated by Jesuits, and I've had a number of Jesuits in my past and in my currently, so somebody who talks about that kind of education and looks at the world through that point of view has a very, I have an open spot in my heart for somebody like that. But when I heard him speak, when he was introduced to talk about the importance of family and his history and all of the work that he's done on civil rights, of being a missionary, of understanding how important family is, understanding how important hard work is, and understanding that, you know, we need to have a government at times that makes sure that the playing field is fair for everyone.
I'm going to ask you about the New York delegation, the feud that's been very public between Governor Cuomo and New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. You know, you're someone, one of the, I think, the first people to, person to not really get along with Governor Cuomo all that well. You were state party chair even at one point, so you did get along with him. Do you think that they're going to try to smooth that over, or do you think there's tensions over that as we start this week?
I think there are clearly our tensions, and, you know, I've had tensions myself, but they've always been over substance, and I think you've seen Mayor de Blasio be very open about the fact that these are policy-based disagreements.
They don't feel like policy-based disagreements, however. They feel exceedingly personal, especially in the kind of staff sniping that you see. And including things that you've heard from the mayor, whether it's been on the record or potentially off the record, and from both of them, it often doesn't seem to be policy-based.
Well, let me tell you, somebody who speaks fairly regularly with Mayor de Blasio, I can tell you that that's the way he has portrayed it to me. Mm-hmm. That's the way I see it. Now, it's a lot more interesting and exciting to cover it from a personality dispute. And also, you know, staffs do snipe at each other. That's what they do. And they're, you know, if their blind loyalty is allowed to kind of dictate the way that they conduct themselves, that can be very problematic. But I also think it's important to recognize, you know, that I am in favor of zealous advocates, and particularly mayors. And that's another thing I was going to say about Tim Kaine, is I will always give somebody who's been a mayor the benefit of the doubt. And, you know, I will, because if you have to answer people's problems about how you put out fires, how you pick up garbage, how you make sure that water that gets to their house is clean, and you go to the grocery store and you're responsible and you understand about how people live, that's the kind of service that I think is the most important kind of service when you're thinking about public policy. And so Tim Kaine had that and has had lots of different service. And look, Mayor de Blasio is a zealous advocate for the people of the city of New York, and I will never fault anybody for being that way.
Speaking of mayors, I didn't realize until today that you can't be mayor for that much longer. You're term limited by the end of next year, right?
Correct.
What is next for you? Are you going to seek another political office?
You know, I don't know. I have a lot that I want to accomplish before my term ends. I'm thankful every day for the opportunity that the people of the city of Syracuse gave me. And I learned long ago that the best way to find a new job is to do a good job at the one you currently have. And if you do that, there will be opportunities that open up. It always has been in the past for me, and I'm hoping that'll be the same way January 1st of 2018.
Statewide office?
I enjoy what I do right now. I have a lot that I want to accomplish. I will kind of look forward to a day where I don't have to have my cell phone attached to me at all times. But I don't know how long that will last.
I bet a week.
We'll see.
All right. Well, there will always be podcast opportunities for you because you did very well on this one.
Thank you.
Mayor Stephanie Miner, we really appreciate it very much. Best of luck.
Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.